This is April 28th, 2023. Doug and Mary Thompson interviewing Vince and Christine Mayevsky of Poplar Hill Dairy Goat Farm in Minnesota. So to start with, Vince and Christine, would one of you tell us how long you've had dairy goats?
We got our first dairy goat in 1968. In Kansas.
And can you tell us why you got dairy goats? Why you got that first one?
Well, we had moved to a farm, as well, just a little 10-acre hobby farm, and we wanted to supply all our own food. So we got chickens, and we got a couple pigs, and we wanted to get a cow for milk. And we discovered, we went to an Mennonite auction, that cows were out of our price range. They had a heifer there, I think, that went for $70, and we thought that was an astronomical amount of money for a heifer, a non-milking heifer. We would never be able to afford a milking goat. So we wrote to a milking cow, I'm sorry.
No, we were trying to buy a calf, though. We weren't looking for a cow.
We were looking for a cow to give us milk.
No, I wasn't.
So,
okay, go ahead.
You continue. Buy a calf to raise for a cow.
You continue.
I just want to get the facts. Just the facts.
That's why I want you to tell it.
Okay, so.
I won't interrupt you. You go on.
So you turned to dairy goats.
So we wrote to Dorothy Day, who, of the Catholic Worker, who was, the Catholic Worker movement was a big part of the reason that we were on a farm. We had, the Catholic Worker believed in cult, culture, and cultivation as the three standards of life. Cult being religion or spirituality, culture being the world around you and arts, and then cultivation being the land.
And you were from New York City,
yes,
right?
Right.
And I was born in
Brooklyn, and born and raised in Brooklyn. Vincent was born in Brooklyn, raised in Oklahoma, but was back after college, was back in New York because his parents had moved back to Long Island. And we both worked at the Catholic Worker in New York City.
Volunteered
there, yeah. And
when is it with a job?
And then we... So when we got married and we moved out back out to Oklahoma, which is where we had met, we wanted to, we decided we were out there that we really wanted to move back to the land. We wanted to be part of the cultivation aspect of the Catholic Worker. And we wound up in Kansas at a farm, a little 10-acre farm that a priest friend of ours had found with us through Mennonites that he knew. And this farm was going to be vacant, and they were happy to have somebody come and live on in the house. So we came there, and that's when we started looking for animals. So when we couldn't get a cow or calf, because we couldn't afford it, we wrote to Dorothy Day, and we told her what we'd done, and we were out there, and we mentioned about the calf and the cow we couldn't afford. And a man who read, Dorothy published it in the newspaper. They have a newspaper, a Catholic Worker newspaper.
You wrote to Dorothy just to tell her what we were doing because we knew her, and we
wanted her to know that
we were doing
the cultivation aspect of the Catholic Worker. And so she published the letter in the Catholic Worker newspaper, and someone who read it, a man from the Bronx, New York, his name was Robert Perazio. Can't believe I remember his name after all this time.
He wrote
to us this long letter saying, "Forget about cow. You should get a goat," and proceeded to tell us about the wonders and of goats and goat milk. So we decided.
And Andrew's letters, and besides, I really like goats.
So we asked a Mennonite pastor who had kind of befriended us,
Deacon Mr. Jost,
if he knew where we might get a goat, and he had a friend who had sheep, and he had a goat who they needed to sell because her udder hung so low that he was using it to nurse orphan lambs. But her otter hung so low in the sheep pasture that it wasn't healthy for her.
It was hard for the lambs to nurse.
So we wound up buying the goat.
How much did she cost? Do you remember?
$20.
Okay.
And we went to a friend of ours that was living with us, had a Karmann Ghia, a little Volkswagen, sporty Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. We took the front seat out of the Karmann Ghia, and I sort of curled up in the sort of back area of the... We went there, bought the goat, put the goat in the front seat, and I sort of sat there crunched up in the back, holding the goat, and we drove home with the goat.
Now, before we got the goat, though, before we did this, we had a little pasture for it around a barn, mm-hmm. little barn, shed, maybe it was, and we fixed the fence. So we plugged all the holes in the fence, all the boards in the fence, so that it would be tight for the goat and it couldn't get out. Mm-hmm. And we brought her home on this Karmann Ghia. We got out of the car, brought her back to the little pen.
First, I brought you. You didn't know we were getting the goat that day. We went because you were teaching school. And so I came home, I took the goat out, went up to the front door of the house, rang the doorbell. You opened the door, and the goat lunged and ran in the and ran down the hall in the house, and we got the goat and brought it back out.
Put her out into the pen, and came back up to the house, and she took one look at the fence and she just leaped right over it.
I was wondering.
And came up to the house. Yeah. She headed off down the road, didn't she? We had to go get her.
We had to go get her.
Yeah.
How soon before you added to?
we were going to move from, we're going to leave Kansas and move up to Minnesota. Vincent was coming up here to do his alternative service at the University Hospital. And I had applied to teach in Minneapolis. So when we got to the point where we were actually going to move, we wanted to bring another goat with us so we'd have two goats and she wouldn't be alone.
So she was by herself then?
She was by herself, yeah.
And we named the first goat Dorothy, after Dorothy of the Catholic Worker, who was the one who led us to getting a goat through Peter Perazio and Robert Perazio and Deacon Jost.
One of the bus drivers in the school where I worked, in the school district where I worked, had goats. So they told me I could go to him and see about getting another goat, which I did. And we went and bought a goat from him. She was a bred doe. She was kind of Toggenburg looking, wasn't she?
Yeah.
And she was a bred doe. So we brought the two of them up to Minnesota, moved up here.
That was in Kansas.
Yes, this was all in Kansas.
What did you name the second goat?
Shanti.
Okay.
Which is Hindu for peace.
Oh, okay.
What town in Kansas, by the way?
Peabody.
Peabody, Kansas is where we lived. I taught in two towns, Whitewater and... another town near there. I'll give it in a minute.
So did you have a truck then that you brought the goats up with, or a back seat of a car? Or?
They were in a car.
We rented a U-Haul truck to put all the furniture and belongings in. We had a Volkswagen Beetle, and we had a large appliance box from like a dishwasher or something like that. We crumpled it all up, put it in the back, uncrumpled it in the back seat of the Volkswagen Beetle, and put our 17 chickens in that box. Christine drove that home. Friend of ours came.
I drove that up to Minnesota.
It drove it to Minnesota, and a friend of ours came. He had a Ford Fairlane, a red one, and we spread a tarp out in the back seat of, and he took the two goats, and we put them in the back seat of the car, and I drove the U-Haul truck with the two dogs and one cat, and we
came north.
We came
north.
It
was one of those strange days that the further north we came, the hotter it got.
It was
not a good day to be driving up here.
Yeah.
With animals.
We stopped in a park, and I didn't let the chickens out, but I kind of opened all the doors and gave them water. And I don't know what Alan did with the goats, but we made it up here anyway, and everything was fine.
And did you have a farm to get to, or where did you go?
We did.
Then?
We were living, it was a farm that we were renting. We called it a farm. It was 80 acres. There was a large garden-type area. It was on a lake. It was about 1,100 feet of lake shore.
But it hadn't been gardened for 40 years.
Yeah, but mostly it was woods. And so we brought them there. There was an outbuilding that it was on the side of a hill, and there were three rooms on the top of the hill. One was a pump room, one was a garage, and the other one was a pump room. And then down below, there was it hadn't been used for horses, wasn't it, the one?
That's the park.
Yeah, and then there was a, under the pump room.
Stalls for horses.
And then on the far side had been an ice house, because where they used to cut the ice out of the lake and bring it, and so it was very well insulated.
It was full of sawdust that they used to put the ice and pack the sawdust around it, and the ice would keep them in to the summer to have ice drinks in the house and for keeping stuff cold in an ice box.
So how long did you live there, and then how did your goat herd increase during that time? And what did you do with them at that point?
Shanti had a baby girl, Gertrude.
A friend of ours, Bob.
Anyway, she was named Gertrude. And then...
Did Dorothy get bred then, ever?
Yes.
Yeah. But she never gave us a doe.
Three sets of bucks. Hmm. Every year she'd have two bucks.
Did she look like an Alta?
She looked like a...
And she was a dairy goat,
kind of like an Oberhasli almost.
Yeah, almost like an Oberhasli.
Okay. Did she milk pretty good?
Very well. Good. She was a breed leader one year for unrecorded grades.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was actually a breed leader. Hmm. So... we got interested then. We had a friend who gave us a dairy... Well, I think she'd done this when we were living in Kansas, actually. She gave us a dairy goat journal. She gave us maybe even a subscription to the dairy goat journal. So then we started getting interested in maybe moving up to purebreds. And we decided we would breed the goat to a purebred. And the closest one we could find was a Saanen, people who had a Saanen in Center City, right? You know where they live. Mm-hmm. So we would, when the goat came in heat, we would drive over to their house and breed the goat. Well, we did that until one year, well, not one year, I mean, we did it one year, and then the next year, we couldn't get the goat to settle. We would go in the morning, it would be in heat, I'd go to work, we'd come back, and then we would drive it up to get, and of course it wasn't in heat anymore. And then one night we drove off the road right by their driveway, and her husband had to come and pull us out. We decided maybe it was time for us to get a buck, a purebred buck.
Now, what year was this by now?
This would have been, let's see, we moved, I should probably
probably
back
70,
up.
70, 90.
No, we moved here in 69. My first year teaching here was 69, 70. Oh, so man. It must have been, that first year when we got it must have been 67. And then this would have been 68. And then we had learned about the Considine family, and we contacted Stephen Considine and bought a Alpine buck from him, Diamond Star Cataline. And he became our herd sire for a long time.
I remember him.
Yeah. And we bought a doe from...
Domiquita.
From Stephen too? Or Daniel?
Either Stephen or Dan, yeah, I don't know.
But she wasn't so good. She didn't turn out so well.
And then did you breed up those grades?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then...
we bought two goats from... it was a year or two later, we bought two purebreds from Bob Harris in New York.
Remember? Oh, I remember. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And...
Well, I don't remember the herd name, do you?
But I do know that he at one point was a director.
Yeah, I don't remember the herd
and,
name.
And I think for several years he was quite active.
And then we bought two goats from from
Cadillac
Ray Maher.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and
we bought a goat from Cadillac too.
Well, and then you got something from Merle Gruber too. You got that Merle Gruber.
No, we didn't buy anything.
I thought you had that buck.
We bought a doe. We bought a Concerto, who later became breed leader. We bought
her from him.
From Merle Gruber.
Yeah. Concerto. Yeah, that was Semper Fidelis. Yeah, she was a breed leader.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, she was a breed leader.
So what? Her mother had been a very, very good milking too.
The early 70s, I
imagine. Yeah, I mean, early 70s. That was the early 70s.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah.
So you went on test then, really? So you moved then, though. So you moved to your current farm.
In 72.
You moved to Poplar Hill.
And
at that time, did you...
How many goats do we have when we moved?
I thought we had 6 when we moved to Poplar Hill.
Okay, so it must have been soon after that you decided to go to commercial? Or what made you decide...
It was in 75 that we did that.
Okay.
We had, when we were at our first place in the woods, Gentle Pines, we called it, we had people who came and bought raw milk from us. It was somebody, I think they'd been snowmobiling, and they happened on the house, and they went, well, we had milk, and they wanted the milk. She was deaf, remember? That woman she was deaf. She wound up being a sister of a woman I taught with later. Anyway, wonderful person. And they bought milk from us, and that's when Mary, there's another woman whose daughter was highly allergic to cow milk. And not only was she allergic to cow milk, but when she got the goat milk, it made her healthier.
Oh, wow.
And she bought milk from us for years and years, probably 12 years or more. So we moved from...
We sell our raw milk for $2 a gallon for many years.
When we moved from that place, Gentle Pines, to our new home when we bought our farm, where we are now, Poplar Hill, several of those raw milk customers came with us and would continue. And that grew, our raw milk customer base.
In the state of Minnesota, you can sell raw milk on the farm on which it's produced, but you can't deliver it or sell it in a retail outlet.
Or advertise it.
And people have to bring their own container.
In fact, they did bring their own containers for a while until we discovered that they were not necessarily as clean as we would want them to be. So we started doing it ourselves. So then that went on. There was another man in this area who was supplying milk to Lund's.
He would just...
Was he Grady?
How that worked out. he would can it a home canner in a quart mason jar, and he sold a little bit, not very much.
Huh.
And they wanted milk. And so we stepped up and said we could supply them with milk. And then we started with them. We started with Lund's and Byerly's.
But then you went grade A?
Yeah, before we could do that, we went grade A.
And you were, as I recall, you were the first grade A goat dairy in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And the only one for a long time, possibly. I don't know now. Are there other grade A?
I don't know if there are.
Now, there may have been some in the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm.
That we don't know about.
Right. But...
Yeah, been hinted at.
Yeah.
And alluded to in some ways, yeah. So that started the market, the grade A market. It was mainly Lund's and...
And meanwhile, you both had full-time jobs doing other things, right?
So it was... But it was about at that time, Vincent was doing real estate, and he decided that if we're going to do this, then he needed to focus all his attention on farming. And so I would continue teaching
for a long time.
A long time, right? For a long time, my teaching supported the farm. Basically, it would not have been able to grow without the wild card, as Vincent said. Every successful farm has to have a wild card, and I was the wild card. My teacher salary was the wild card.
Yeah.
Now, one thing to record, I think, is the fact that the Minnesota Dairy Goat Association started in 1971.
71. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we first met you at Mitchell Cole's,
mm-hmm.
who was trying to organize a Minnesota Dairy Goat Association.
Well, it's kind of reorganized it because it existed decades ago before any of us.
So we met at his, he had a meeting at his farm to do that, and that is where we met you two.
And we reformed the Minnesota
Dairy Goat Association.
And you became the editor, I believe, to the Gopher Goat Gossip. Right.
That was a friend who was with it who sort of said it as a joke to me. Oh. And so I then called it out, and so I get credit for it.
Go ahead, take it.
The Gopher Goat Gossip.
So you got that purebred Alpine buck from Steve Considine.
Right.
So that Alpines, would you consider them your first breed?
Oh, yeah.
And then how did you add breeds after that?
We mainly added when people we knew who had good goats were ready to get rid of goats.
First we added the Nubians before the Toggenbergs and Sonnens.
We only had how many? Couple.
Well, we ordered two Nubians from Cadillac.
I remember that.
And one of them became a...
Was that Patrice or something like that?
Patsy Seuss.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember her.
She became a permanent grand champion.
Yeah.
And we ordered two from...
California.
From...
Who was the big Nubian breeder out there?
A girl.
Who was... Probably her mother's mainly was the one, but she got credit for it.
LaHonda
Spring? No.
I don't know who it was.
That was Tracy?
No.
She...
Oh, we'll think about it.
Okay. Well, then what came after Nubians?
Then a friend of ours who lived in just at like 5-10 acres several miles from us had some Toggenbergs, and they were going to move back from their hobby farm back into the city. And they asked us if we would buy their goats because they knew we'd give them a good home. Mm-hmm. And so we looked at their pedigrees, and they were Diamond Sunshine Toggenbergs. Oh. And so we bought them. There were just a few, maybe five or six. And then not long thereafter, a friend of ours was moving to... She had Sonnens, and these were very good Sonnens. She had shown them as a 4-H'er and done very well. And so...
Is that Jeannie Ledger? No.
It was Stoklosa.
Stoklosa. And
Nancy Cole and John Stoklosa and their two children.
Mm-hmm. Her name is Sarah Stoklosa.
And they did. They were part of the first at the state fair. Mm-hmm. Year before we were actually,
so
we were just doing booths outside. Remember the year?
And these were purebred Sonnens, so we bought them. Just there are a few, like four or five again, and that started our Sonnen herd.
Right, but the Toggenbergs were from those people up north, I thought. Well, you would know the name.
No, they were from, the Toggenbergs were from...
Mark Boris?
No.
I got a letter down that I got to write to.
Atkinson?
No. That was later. From...
Amy?
It doesn't matter. We got to get that thing.
If we think of it later, we'll bring it up.
He owned the tobacco farm in Kentucky.
With Wendell Berry.
He was a good friend with Wendell Berry.
Yeah.
And Wendell Berry even
dedicated a book to him.
And well, anyway, we
Grissom, Tom Grissom.
Tom Grissom, Tom and Sandra Grissom, and they were moving, and we
to Kentucky,
and so we bought the Toggenbergs from them.
Do you remember the herd name?
No.
They didn't really do anything with them, although they're...
But there was somebody else up north that we bought Toggenbergs from.
Well, that's the one he mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Who did you mention?
The Atkinsons.
Atkinsons. I think that was added
the
most Toggenbergs.
They had some nice Toggenbergs.
That added the most Toggenbergs to our herd.
Yeah, that was a big dump.
Okay.
So then now we had four breeds.
And then you had your commercial dairy.
Right.
By now.
75 as we started.
And so it sounds like you actually got into DHI pretty early.
Before
early?
Then, before
I mean, if Dorothy was on
right, right.
test and yep. was a breed leader, I mean, that's, to me, that's kind of, that's really good. I mean, it's interesting that early on you saw the value mm-hmm. of that. And you've been registering your goats ever since then.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Which I wanted to just for this broadcast or whatever we call it, that I understand that Poplar Hill has more registrations than any other dairy or group of goats.
Under the Poplar Hill. There are more Poplar Hill goats in the country than any other registered
breed. Right. And that, do you have any idea how many that is? Or?
No. You know who would know would be Gene Dershowitz.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because he's the first one who told us that we had that many. I mean, that we were, or we were second, and Dan was first back then that year that he came. And
yeah, and then,
we exceeded Dan.
Yeah, so that's really something, I think. It's got to be thousands.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So
what, for example, for DHIA, did you have a lot of trouble getting started with that, with dairy goats?
No.
Well, they didn't ever acknowledge dairy goats. The DHIA didn't. But we had it set so that they would send the numbers to ADGA. So we got credit. ADGA gave us credit for being on DHIA.
Mm-hmm. And we were officially.
Yeah, but it didn't really work the other way too much. I mean, for years they barely acknowledged the goats were on. They didn't do really anything to smooth over or to adjust any of the calibrating they were doing anyway for goats.
And at that time, the supervisor for the testing would actually come to your farm.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Twice a day.
Yeah.
But do they still? Or don't they still?
They still come, but only once a day.
Oh, once a day. And,
yeah.
Did they stay at your place?
No, he lived in White Bear Lake.
Oh, okay.
And he did cow farms up in this area.
Yeah, he was R.C. Walker.
R.C. Walker.
Really nice man. Uh-huh. Really nice man.
Now, one thing, you with your farm, how many acres do you have now?
We have 120 acres and that we own, and then there's an additional probably 150 acres that we rent.
And you're one of the few dairy goat farms, I believe, that where you grow most all your own food, don't you?
Well, I don't know how many do, but we grow corn, oats, and alfalfa, and soybeans.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have our own grinder. We grind our own feed, and we add a trace mineral mix to that and feed our goats.
Yeah, so it makes it where a lot of farms we've discovered when you buy your feed, you can be picky and buy premium growth alfalfa, for example, if you want to. But we feed them what we grow, so we are not always feeding them the ideal stuff that you would want to. Mm-hmm. But it is the way we farm.
You have some pasture too, don't you? Just your milkers?
Small pastures for all the goats can get
it's
out.
They're more exercise areas.
They can get out and eat a little bit. The bucks can go on the hillside and eat, and they pasture out there some. Mm-hmm. And
the old dairy barn.
But they're fed all the time. We have the main barn is 200 feet long with a drive-through aisle, and they put their heads through a slant bar feeder system and eat hay on the aisle, and then the milkers get fed grain twice a day in the milking parlor, and we have a milking parlor that we can bring 48 goats in. We have 12 machines. Each machine will eventually milk 4 goats, and we move them down, and there'll be 2 people in the parlor to monitor those machines, and then those 48 goats are moved out, and another 48 goats come in, and they're milked. And the most we've ever milked at one time was 550 is the most number of goats.
But back in the 70s, what was your dairy setup? In the early 70s, you had the barn.
Was the old barn, which is the bottom of a hill, and we made a milking parlor in one room there, put milking stands up, the goats would come in, then we would carry the milk in buckets up the hill to a milk house where we had the bulk tanks.
There used to be a concrete pit in there that they used to put the milk cans from cows in, and the windmill would pump the water over it, and then we tore out that pit insulated that little house and put a 155-gallon Sunset bulk tank in there, and we'd carry all that milk up for 1972 to 1991.
Wow.
How many? Wow. So that's
the beginning of my bad back.
19 years, we carried the milk in a transfer bucket up the hill.
Through the snow drifts in the winter.
The snow and dump it in.
And that was probably before you went to school in the morning, right?
When I often milked before, I went to school in the morning. But yes, but then we eventually got milking help. Mm-hmm. So I did not have to do that anymore, which was good.
I had to carry it all up the hill.
How long before you built your...
We built the new building in 1991.
The real big barn.
Yeah, and we named it Domus Caprorum. And there's a granite plaque in front of it that says Domus Caprorum in Roman numerals 1991. And a lot of people think that's a gravestone, but that's the name of
the House of the Goats.
The House of Goats, in Latin for the House of Goats.
Now, will that become a gravestone or something?
Yeah, it could be.
Maybe.
The first barn we built, though, was the pole barn. We built a pole barn and had five pens in there.
Where the bucks are
for goats.
No.
No, the big barn where they were sitting with those baby goats today.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the first barn you built.
That's the first barn that we built.
There were five pens in there for dry stock and and then equipment storage on one side. Okay. And dry stock. It's 100 foot by 50 foot.
And then the next barn we built was the buck barn, I think, maybe.
Yeah, the buck barn.
And then, which was a horse barn and buck barn. So we got a horse. And so from my sister, it was a foal from her mare. And one side of that barn was the horse barn with the horse stall and the tack room. And then the other side was for the bucks. And then the next barn we built.
And they had a pretty decent sized pasture area for the bucks, and they could go down the hill to Fish Lake, where they'd go fishing and swimming.
joke. So, in case that doesn't come across. And then the next barn we built, and in between building the barns, we would do improvements to the house. Mm-hmm. So it was fix up the house in some way and then build a barn, and then added an extension onto the house and then build a barn. We went back and forth like that for years.
The house is a good 120 years old.
Meanwhile, you had a human family too. That
We did. When we moved to the farm. We had our daughter who had just been born the year that we moved to Poplar Hill, 1972. And then in 1974, we had a son. And in 1978, we had another son. And in 1984, we had another son. So we have four children.
Sarah Nell.
Sarah Nell is the oldest, right? She's the one in 1972. And then Seth Elliott Mayevsky, and then Shane Gregory Mayevsky, and Stephen Wizard Mayevsky. And three of them continued to help on the farm. Sarah actually does a lot of the running of the farm. And Shane helps and Stephen help out.
And Seth lives out in the Pacific Northwest.
Seth lives in Spokane, Washington, right, with his family.
And they were all involved with 4-H, right? Coming
they
out
were.
By, and each, didn't they each have their own breed?
Right, right. Out? Sarah was Nubians. Shane was Alpines. Seth was Toggenbergs. And Stephen was Sonnens. That's it. So we couldn't have any more children then because we only had four breeds of goats.
Now you can have more.
Yes, we have 11 grandchildren.
And at least the local grandchildren, they come out to the farm, right?
Yes, and they help. Yeah, and they've all been in 4-H as well.
This is the time to tell the story about Linnea, which is Shane's daughter. And when she was showing, how old would she be, 11? Mm-hmm. She was showing goats, and the judge at the Washington County Fair, and the judge asks her, how long have you been showing goats? And she thought for a minute and says, my whole life.
And she's probably, that's so.
And just pretty accurate.
Yeah.
As far as your markets for your milk, how did that develop?
Well, in the early years, Vincent would go from store to store to store. And one of the things that enabled us to grow was we kind of paralleled the growth of the co-op, grocery store co-op movement in Minnesota. And Minnesota is kind of the beginning of, or the foundations of the co-ops in America, actually. Really? The co-op stores started here, yeah. And so that's where we would sell our milk. And Vincent would go from co-op to co-op to co-op and some health food stores, which would take our milk and sell it. Vincent.
When we contacted the small dairy, which is no longer in existence, in North Branch, Minnesota, which is about a half hour from our farm, he agreed to pasteurize and containerize our milk. So we designed our own quart carton, and I contacted 21 stores in the Twin Cities area, and they agreed to carry our milk on a guaranteed sale basis. If at the end of 1 week they had sold it, we'd take it back, give them full credit for it, and give them fresh milk. And so that's how we started. And several years after that, we got a distributor that would take it around the stores, and we didn't have to go to store to distribute it. And
didn't you have a milk truck?
We bought a Ford F500 refrigerated home delivery truck from Land O'Lakes. But when we first started in 75, in the state of Minnesota, you couldn't store milk, grade A milk, in cans. They still picked up cans from grade B farms. Couldn't store milk on a grade A farm, so you had to have a bulk tank. They just passed a law to require that. But you could haul it in cans. Mm-hmm. So we would pump it from our 155-gallon bulk tank into a can and put it in our milk truck and take it up to the dairy and dump it in their pasteurization vat, and they pasteurize it. A couple years later, they said, you can't do it with these old galvanized cans anymore. We had a stainless steel cans. So we went to stainless steel cans, and now they don't even allow that.
Where are our stainless steel cans?
Some of them are right there in the wall in the milk house along the bulk tank.
Don't we have some other stuff?
They're hiding in plain sight.
So then what did you have to do then?
Then you had to pick up the milk at North Branch?
Well, we'd take it up there and they'd pasteurize it immediately.
From there you had to distribute it.
Put it in the refrigerated milk truck and haul it into these 22 stores in the Twin Cities area.
But I thought you said at one point they wouldn't let you haul it in cans at all. Didn't you say
that? Yes, subsequent to that, we bought a bigger truck.
With a bulk tank.
Oh. And we put a 500-gallon bulk tank inside the truck.
So you'd pump it into that and then take it to
and the, then pump right. it out at the dairy.
Is that what you do now?
That's pretty much what we do now, too, yeah. And then we did that with North Branch. And then what year did we pick up Lund's?
That's not a 500, that's an 800-gallon bulk tank.
At what time, when did we pick up Lund's?
Well, later we were contacted by Cloverleaf Dairy, which is no longer in existence. It's been purchased by
Kemp's.
It was purchased for Marigold for a while, and then Kemp's. We've seen a lot of different changes of names. We've outlived them all. Well, anyway, they contacted us, and they wanted to. The Lund store wanted to have the milk
in their own cartons, so they wanted to their own design cartons.
And so
when you would take it to the creamery, they would put some in our cartons and some in the Lund's cartons.
They designed their own carton. They call it Nanny's Pride.
I remember that.
And I said, "Well, Nanny is not really." Oh, that's the name they wanted. And
that's
so
the name they anyway.
We lived with Nanny Pride. We had our Poplar Hill milk, and then the Nanny Pride, and Cloverleaf distributed that and for years until finally they at one point they said they'd just as soon have the milk in a Poplar Hill carton, and so we discontinued Nanny's Pride milk, which was fine for us,
and then the North Branch Creamery closed down, and we had to find another creamery, which we fortunately were able to do in Hastings, Minnesota.
Oh,
so it has to be a creamery that is big enough to do what we need done, but small enough to handle the small amount of goat milk that we had. And that was not an easy thing to find.
And so we're still doing with them. And so once a week we go there, and then we send other milk to Stickney Hill, the cheese plant. For years we took it to Bass Lake and they made cheese and we marketed it in our own Poplar Hill name. But once again, we outlived them. He retired and wasn't going to make cheese, so we didn't have a cheese maker. But Stickney Hills were taking milk, and we thought, rather than try to market our own product and find another place and get it there, we just let Stickney Hill pick it up.
So the problem is that the milk that we had in Bass Lake cheese, when they were making it, it was all our milk. Mm-hmm. So it was totally our cheese.
And we'd label
it. Now our milk is commingled with milk from other dairies, so that the cheese that's made is no longer just our.
Yeah, it's under the Stickney Hill name.
How long was your association with Bass Lake?
Oh,
long time.
Good 30 years.
Wow.
30, maybe 35 mm-hmm. years.
Was Scott?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was he there? He was originally.
Yeah, he was originally just the cheesemaker. It was owned by Old Fisco. Was it owned by Old Fisco?
Yeah,